Alright everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and I got a question. Are you ready for some degeneracy? Because it's Grim's Hentai Corner. And while I freeze my ass off, because winter's not through yet, looks like I'm going to have to grab my jacket. We are coming to you with maggot baits. Again, this was requested. Shit, it's fucking cold. And I want to make sure that we cover at least another hour. And I'm going to try to fit the wild card in after that. Hopefully, because I told myself I was going to go to bed at a decent hour. That's a funny joke. Okay, anyway, let's get started. Slumville. That's not right. Slumville, 50th floor. On it was the personal space of Shimon, leader of the shadows behind Cantel's pandemonium. In terms of a castle, it was his keep. Naturally, there were barriers of unparalleled violence on the path leading to it. So when an intruder showed up without any announcement, Shimon actually cocked his head in confusion. Equally baffling was that the man was a completely unarmed elderly gentleman, paralyzed in an electric wheelchair. Hey now, Gramps, what's the meaning of this? You're bypassing too much here. How impossible is that? Shimon's almost humorous yet astounded attitude attended to that more than anything. I don't think it's all that surprising. Not when you've aided in creating this city anyway. You should have a deeper understanding than I of how to twist and deceive the laws of this world. The words spoken in that elderly man's deep voice made Shimon remove the mask concealing his talents. His sharp eyes narrowed with understanding and wariness. Oh, which means you're a magus. That term came out of his mouth, magus, almost sounded crazy. Regardless, the elderly man accepted it as if it were perfectly natural. Heavens no, I'm but a humble archaeologist. Real Magi have been extinct for a long time, since around the start of last century. Those known by that title, Crowley, Gurdjieff, and the more modern mystic, Rasputin, were all fundamentally different from you. Little side note, I used to study Crowley and Gurdjieff. Gurdjieff, very interesting man. He believed that people like myself that enjoy stories and write stories are useless because they're only writing their dreams and they're asleep. He said that in order for a person to be awake, they had to be performing hard physical labor. So he was a very burly man, and he would get all these guys together, and they would do heavy labor as part of their, their training to become more awake. Like, because again, he didn't believe unless you were sweating and working hard that you were actually alive. He said that people that write stories and basically live in their dreams and they may as well be dead. Very interesting guy, Gurdjieff. I highly recommend you research him. It's very interesting. You may find some red pill knowledge there. Now, Crowley, I've researched him inside and outside. I've read several of his books. Obviously, Magic and Theory and Practice is the biggest one that he gave the occult community. You see how Wicca kind of bastardized a lot of what he said. And apparently, Gerald Gardner handed Crowley one of his books on his deathbed. Crowley looked at it and said it was rubbish. And that sounds like Crowley. Even though Crowley lost his goddamn mind and started shitting on the floor later in his career because he thought that he was like the Buddha and the Buddha's feces was considered holy. Like he could shit on the floor and people were supposed to be able to praise it because it was a symbol of holiness. So he started doing that and he thought that he was like the Buddha when he got a little older. But there's a lot of things that he did, like, I read a lot of the different, like, even the stuff that was only for the OTO, all that. I was pretty big into Thelema back then, so I know a lot about that. I used to have a Thelemic symbol that I wore. I actually knew a lot about Crowley. if you want to say Magi, I guess, like, still living, Alan Moore. Alan Moore definitely considers himself that way. You'll find a lot of that stuff in Promethea. Yes, it's kind of a progressive, maybe they call that woke these days, but I mean, it was more of an occult primer than anything else. And there is Grant Morrison, who The Invisibles, which The Matrix was based off on, The Matrix was based off, and the whole red pill analogy was based off, has Grant Morrison to thank for that. Because again, The Matrix pretty much ripped off Grant's books. Grant isn't, I mean, he's happy, but he's not, like, thrilled about it, you know? He's just like, they could have at least given me a nod or something, you know? They just stole my work, and it became this billion-dollar franchise. But yeah, all that stuff can be adapted, was adapted in the Invisibles. So definitely get your hands on The Invisibles. And you may have to read it more than one time. It's something that's way, way out there. A lot of people can't just grasp it once, and it gets a little crazier as you read on through it. But there you go. That's my little rant on Magi and magic. Oh, also, this is not bullshit. If you want to really get a good book still recommended in modern communities, get on Amazon and look up The Disinformation Book of Lies. Yes, it's called Book of Lies. It's really good. Make sure it's the red one, because there's a black one and a red one. Get the red one, that's revised. That has Grant Morrison's Pop Magic, which is pretty much all you need to know about chaos and magic and all that good stuff. It's some good stuff in there. There's some Timothy Leary stuff. All kinds of really interesting, neat stuff. If you're into that. You know, some people may think it's bullshit. And in some ways, it is, you know. But in some ways, it's not. So, give it a try. And you might find something in it you like. At any rate, let's go on. The elderly man brought his deeply wrinkled hands together on his lap in the wheelchair. A ring of brass and iron gave a cold, dull glow. However, I have heard that a lone witch survives. One that boasts great secret influence over the darkness in our world after obtaining vast stores of gold and a means of immortality. My business is with that witch. You can find plenty of witches if you walk the city streets. Why not have them give you a taste of paradise for your trip to the underworld? Shimon gave him a derisive, hostile smile. The elderly gentleman gave him a sigh, an appeal of laughter. I'm not talking about those fake witches. I'm talking about the one and only real hex of our time. Perhaps I should call her by her other name, Yaldabaoth, which I believe is... No. I can't remember what Yaldabaoth means. I know that Metatron is voice of God, but I can't remember Yaldabaoth. I know there's a band called Yaldabaoth that was really funny. They only lasted one album, but it was a funny one. Shimon's expression changed immediately upon hearing that name. Vicious hostility swirled in his eyes as they pierced the elderly man. Why, you... Simon of Samaria. The heretic priest worshipping that false god. You who names yourself after the biblical Magus must reap your due as well, for the sanctity of my granddaughter's soul. For the first time, a piercing glow of animosity lit up in the elderly gentleman's faded eyes. Despite that, Shimon's lips curled into a beastly sneer. Heh, so that's it. You've also got business with me from 7 years ago. Christ, these rotten ties never cease. Behind his eyes lurked the image of a wild beast still fresh in his memory. He would eventually need to kill that man who escaped from Brian's clutches. Heather was still a child. Her disease was incurable, and she didn't have much time left. But that's why my son, his wife, and I wished for her to spend her final days in happiness. The elderly man closed his eyes, ruminating on his last words. His hand shook slightly as the brass and iron ring glowed again. Shimon's gaze was drawn to the magic pentagram carved into it. If God will not punish you for your sins, then I will gladly borrow the devil's might and send you to hell. I offer my own soul up to this, obtained through exhaustive means. Before he knew it, the elderly gentleman was chanting a vow in Hebrew. At the same time, the space around them began to warp. I see, so that King Solomon's ring is the real deal. No wonder you managed to just stroll on in here. It is said that ancient king received magic rings from an archangel which allowed him to command 72 demons. Even if magi have perished from this world, such articles of old power were still scattered around the world today. In the end, whatever majestic figure was crawling out of the abyss through that rupture completely vanished before it could draw itself into the physical three-dimensional world. The old man's face twisted in shock. Well, I should use what I've been holding in reserve too. Merely banishing demons is hardly a fitting task to use it on, though. Shimon's hand and neck peeked out from under his suit. His skin itself peeled off and detached like papyrus, Grecian writing rising to the surface like a tattoo. The elderly gentleman was speechless when he recognized that writing. That's the Gospel of Judas, and the original at that. Remember that the Gospel of Judas was apparently one of the very last texts of the Apocrypha that they found. It basically showed that Judas was interested, like it was planned, like he knew what was going on, and apparently the Judas and Jesus are some sort of love sort of thing, like a brotherhood sort of deal. And basically he knew that he was supposed to deny, Christ three times and all that sort of thing. Like, that they knew what was going to happen. That it wasn't like, it wasn't like Jesus was shocked. They knew it was going to happen. Jesus told him pretty much ahead of time that you've got to do this and all that. And, Judas is always and made out to be the traitor. Even in, Dante's Inferno, he's considered one of the bodies that Satan was eating in the pit. And that's actually not going to be very accurate because, of course, Judas and Jesus both, apparently according to this gospel, discussed all this ahead of time. And it makes a lot of sense. It doesn't seem to me that Christ would have kept anything like this from his disciples. And he said, he did say you would deny me three times. But I think that there was more going on than that. And that's what the Gospel of Judas seems to state. I haven't read it, but that's what the overall gist of it is. I don't know if it's Christian fan fiction or part of the book, but the Apocrypha is pretty fucking weird. Especially when you get to the demon names of body parts and all that weird crazy crap. Yeah, it's a real nuisance. Yeah, it's a real nuisance that can overturn anything and everything in this world. Well, sucks for you. Time to give up. The man proclaimed that with an unusual tone of compassion. Blech. The man proclaimed that with an unusual tone of compassion. But then he nonchalantly pulled a Beretta from his suit pocket. He fired. The empty casing hit the floor and the old man's wheelchair creaked once before going silent after he was shot in the face. Next time you should bring the real God with you. The middle-aged man muttered lazily, his words fading emptily into the night. A national highway, roughly 50 kilometers south of Kanto's Pandemonium. Oh, I think this is going to introduce the cool character. The government's heavy barricades were erected on all roads leading into the former Kajiao City. The physical blockade separating it from the adjoining regions gave off a ruinous atmosphere that made it hard to imagine as part of Japan. These locations were also the boundaries connecting that lawless land with the outside world. For that reason, they've seen plenty of activity these past 7 years with various illegal dealings between both sides. The sale of illegal drugs and unregistered Japanese men or women, money laundering and tax evasion through underground banks, a huge black market dealing in those and other enterprises that would warrant great risk domestically, had developed around the flow of goods, humans, and money. So a lone station wagon driving down the Japanese side towards the border of Kanto's Pandemonium wasn't even worth mentioning that day. Anyone choosing to head to that place had to be a shady person with business in that vile city. Eventually, the vehicle slowed and stopped near the barricade as it cut off its engine. In front of it, on the foreign side of the road, was a huge hatchback idling away. Beside it stood a single man, Tsunaga Shogo. The door opened on the driver's side, and Shu stepped onto the dust-covered asphalt. A middle-aged man appeared out of the station wagon. He had broad shoulders and a thick stature. He looked somewhere around his 60s, and the rough outfit covering his body attested to his long years of temperance and discipline. The man glanced over at Tsunaga. It's been a long time, Igo-san. About half a year since we last met? Tsunaga moved forward, slightly bowing to that man, Igo Nubutake. The air about you's changed a lot, Shogo. Igo remarked as soon as he opened his mouth. There were bitter, pain wrinkles surrounding his eyes and brow, attesting to the change in the elite subordinate he once trusted. Tsunaga's bearing gave off hostility, and possibly even a beastly odor. It was the same air Igo often felt from the felons he faced as an officer. No, it was even worse than that. If an upright person feels that way, then the transition's going smoothly. I'm getting closer to my goal. Tsunaga's lips curled into a daring smile. He didn't used to be a man who would sneer like that. Once again, Igo thought about how deeply the case 7 years ago had changed their fate. Back then, Igo was the head of a security branch at the MPD, but he submitted his resignation a year after that case. It was around the same time Kanto's Pandemonium and the special laws around it came into being. His pretense was taking responsibility for demanding permission to order the forced entry that led to unprecedented casualties in the line of duty, as well as the MPD SAT team's destruction. The truth was that his heart just couldn't take it anymore. Forced to bury that case without any resolution, he felt powerless as an officer of the police department. That day, justice and the law had lost. Igo felt that he couldn't go on living as a cop with his back turned on that fact. He later learned that Tsunaga recovered from his coma, but he had already left the force and disappeared. It was only half a year ago that he finally made contact with the man he once thought of as a son to him. I'm not planning to start going on about good sense at this point. Besides, in the end, I just ran away from what I should have stood up against. Igo put a cigarette in his mouth, a brand known for its high nicotine content, and lit it with a disposable lighter. The smoke billowed from it for a moment, blending what he saw with his memories. You're far more upright. You're far more upright fighting as you are now. Stop it, Ego-san. Tsunade gave Ego a calm smile as he derided himself. His tone had changed too. All I'm doing is just self-satisfaction. Nothing more or less. No one should be comparing themselves to me. Besides, I've recently started feeling a sense of accomplishment in murder. It's enjoyable. Hopelessly so. On the outside, I'd just be a crazed murderer. There's no need to sympathize with a person like that. Tsunade spoke with complete indifference, not even mocking himself. Ego listened to it all in silence. The tobacco smoke stung his eyes, making him blink a tear away. Let's get down to business. He stomped the cigarette out without another word. Then he flipped over the back door of the station wagon. Inside it were several large wooden boxes packaged up. Ego opened each one of them. I couldn't get the goods you ordered, but I managed to secure substitutes with the funds you gave me. Wrapped in packing material inside one of the boxes was a long barrel with glistening steel. It was part of a dismantled heavy weapon. This one was originally sleeping in... This one was originally sleeping in storage with the Indonesian army, but it slipped out of the country during the East Timorese crisis. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I don't know what happened after that, but it ended up confiscated by the Fukuoka Prefecture Police after a violent gang in Kitakyushu bought it from a Chinese broker. After that, it floated into the underground through the usual side business. Ego was presently staining his hands with buying up confiscated arms and explosives from dirty cops selling them out of the stations. The favor Tsunade had asked for him 6 months ago was to use his old cop connections for crime. Realizing what Tsunade intended to do, Ego actually felt a sense of salvation for some reason. Whatever shape it may take, his actions could help bring closure to that case. It made the emptiness Ego suffered a little lighter for certain. In fact, he didn't feel a shred of guilt or doubt as a former protector of the law. Tsunade calmly checked over the articles without a shift in expression. He loaded each and every wooden box into the hatchback he drove. Then he silently climbed into the driver's seat. I'll contact you again sometime. Tsunade turned back and spoke to the door before returning his gaze to the windshield. Far ahead of him sat the city of Kanto's pandemonium. But Ego swallowed the words he nearly spoke and watched the dust trailing behind the leaving vehicle. His words wouldn't mean anything, at least not before the mountain of corpses Tsunade was likely stacking every day, not compared to the overwhelming weight of that action. Dust danced in the dry wind blowing against Ego's back as he lingered there for a long time. Where am I? The young girl woke in the pit of darkness. Collapsing apartment complexes lined the area around her, their walls covered intermittently with nonsensical scrawls. The foul odor of piss and blood prodded her nose. Inside the buildings were shops selling shady drugs, women, organs, and other goods. Men who clearly weren't respectable sat or slept along the roadside by the shops. Occasionally, they would forcibly draw in customers, exchange money, and give some crude smiles. This was Kantau's pandemonium, a city that served as a trash bin for all kinds of scoundrels and outlaws, from criminals to illegal immigrants. The innocent young girl woke in the middle of this underground. What was I doing? Why am I in a place like this? She couldn't understand the situation. Before she knew it, she was here in her current form. She didn't even recall putting on the black and white outfit she wore. She had no idea why she was here. She couldn't recall anything at all. Moreover, she wasn't even sure of what exactly she was. No memories? What happened to me? Where's my home? I'm scared. She dug around in her memories, but nothing came to mind. The young girl trembled. She felt terror at existence itself, like someone suddenly thrust into the darkness of the deep sea. Oh-ho! There's a witch! She may be a witch, but she's still just a brat. Maybe she's a virgin, huh? Unfamiliar men began crowding around the young girl as she walked in a daze. Several of the men clearly dressed like thugs, and vulgar smiles crossed their lips as they surrounded the almost childish girl. The reason for their bold attitude was Allison's frightened reaction. They hoped they might be able to have their way with her by force if she was in that mindset, even if she were a witch. Her childish appearance was no cause for restraining their lust. Nearly all males had an instinctual desire to breed with younger females. Okay, if this is Lolly, we have to skip it, but, you know. Who are you, gentlemen? Surrounded by the pack of men, her anxiety peaked into fear. Even without knowledge and memories, malice was one emotion she understood from birth.
Hey, little girl. Let's all have some fun together.
That sounded like a classic anime dub, right? One of the men reached his hand out towards the frightened girl. No! What are you gonna do?
Something that feels great, obviously. Shut up and get fucked!
Uh-huh. This will benefit you too, young lady.
Stop it! No! No! Alright, this will probably flip to a CG, so you guys will see me on the other side. Well, not yet. The girl tried to resist, but two men held her down and kept her from moving. They tore her clothes off by hand, shredding them. They chucked her on top of her own piss puddle. The milky white juices filling her lips, crotch, and ass started running out as she lay in her yellow puddle. The thoroughly raped little girl didn't even have the strength left to acknowledge how filthy it was.
Damn it, I held back and waited my turn. Now I can't even bring myself to touch her with this stench of cum and piss. Oh well, wanna break her bones? Guy who breaks the most bones in this brat in one go wins. Hold on, let me fuck her first. I don't care if she's covered in cum and piss. Oh, it's disgusting.
One of the men slapped forward from the crowd around the girl and slapped her soiled cheeks. Wake up, Allison Chan. This time it's you and me. The man seemed to recognize her, calling her Allison. Her mind had vaguely recovered from having her face smashed, and there she found her name deeply ingrained. For whatever reason, she was certain that was her name. Yes, she was Allison. Once the man saw Allison's awareness returning, he grinned and hugged her delicate body against him.
I'll make sure to replenish your semen and save you, okay?
While he spoke to her kindly, he lifted her wide open cum drip. After filling her immature womb, with his jizz, the man left her covered in cum and went home. Yeah, some scenes I don't care for in this. Tossed aside on the street, Allison just looked up a night sky with empty eyes. A narrow rectangular piece of the night sky could be seen against the outlines of the buildings. Cold asphalt lay under her back. The pool of fresh blood flowing and spreading beneath her was her own life. Raped and mangled, Allison lay there like a dead dog. Looking up from ground level, the stars twinkling in the night sky seemed incredibly distant. Those pretty sublime lights seemed like a living being endlessly different from herself. She felt worthless, like a maggot crawling along the ground. For those of you that want to know what just happened, basically, she's a lowly character. They raped her pretty brutally. And then after that, one of the guys decided to take a knife, put it into her stomach, cut her all the way out through, take out her intestines, literally picked up her intestines, and shoved the intestines into her mouth. And it does show all that. Now, I don't know how far Amber wants me to go, but I am a respectful man, and I know when shit is too fucking far. So, I'm sure you can find it on some kind of internet site if you gotta see that kind of thing, but yeah. There's probably limits, and I don't want any issues from something like that. That's probably a little bit too much. Especially the Lolicon rape. I can't show that. Sorry guys, there's limits. Allison waited as she drowned in tears and bloody phlegm. I don't want this. The men listened to her incoherent mumblings with disdain. Their faces were drunk in the afterglow of expunging all their destructive urges, but they warped the moment they saw Allison. When they saw that the girl, young girl-shaped creature, keep in mind, this is a young girl-shaped creature. This is not an adult character. Well, it is an adult character. You know what I mean. It's the kind of thing I can, you know, I don't really... Creature was still alive after all they'd done. Their expressions paled as they sobered up from their frenzy, staring at her. Ironically, their awareness of what they had done gave them chills when faced with their immortality, but they also feared a retribution. If they didn't do something about this witch right here, right now, then next time they met, they were the only ones who'd be in danger. Regaining their calm, the men were already calculating and planning their survival. Hey, have you heard the rumors about the witch hunters? One man mentioned rumors he had heard going forward. Witches don't usually die, right? But I hear those guys go around killing witches, which means killing them is possible. I've heard of that, too. I get it. Let's make a deal with her. Let's make a deal for her with the witch hunters, then. That's a great idea. Better yet, I bet that'll earn us some nice dough. The men entrenched in evil shared their opinions without a misbeat. Once again, arrogance returned to their expressions as they looked down on Allison. But do we have connections? We can just start looking for them tonight, right? If we sever all of her limbs and stuff each in separate garbage bags, she surely won't return to normal. One drew close to Allison, bearing a knife stained with fat and blood, but that man was rash. Allison had been weakened to the verge of death from her past blood loss, but at the same time, the semen poured into her and spilling out was already revitalizing her immortal body. No way! Yeah, she was definitely a Loli character. For reference, this is really confusing. Because when you see the CG scene, she has an adult body. Like, her proportions are an adult body. But then when you see this, she has more of an innocent, childlike look. So it's very fucking confusing. And this is probably where the Western Twitter nuts go crazy. Which I can understand, because it is hard to tell. It's like, hey, this character looks like this, but then she looks like this, and it's the same thing. And they're, of course, going to see this, and they're like, but that's a child! And then they're going to look at that and be like, oh, well, they're sexualizing it. But yeah, but the body, we know the difference in what a child looks like and what an adult looks like. And she has adult proportions in the CG scene. So, it's very fucking confusing. The blood puddles splashed violently with a sudden scream. In an instant, her small frame soared through the air, and Allison's unique brutal edge, a pair of showtails, I don't know what the showtails are, glimmering in the darkness, appeared in both her hands. Allison leapt with another scream. She rampaged wildly, driven by her surging emotions. Everyone there was minced in an instant, the severed organs and hunks of flesh scattered around her, and the slaughter ended all too quickly. Her teary face, twisted in fear and despair, settled down with a mountain of corpses before her. A bright smile crossed her young face as she felt the power a child does when they first learn to ride a bike. I did it! I'm strong! With just a little bit of effort, she was able to murder all the men she feared so strongly. The wound she thought she would die from didn't seem like much anymore, either. She had nothing to fear in that case, encouraged by those thoughts. She looked up at the night sky, which seemed far more closer now. It was pretty. Allison saw it among the shining stars, three colored beams of light faster than the wind, racing through the night. Allison started walking after the three shooting stars as if they were guiding her. In Kanto's pandemonium, ruins were hardly rare. Every block of the city had suffered destruction, and it was unusual for districts to be abandoned. Their numbers only grew with each year. Most were destroyed in the battle between the SDF and the disastrous witches during Pandemonium's inception. that, or they were destroyed from the shockwaves of the duels between the witches that became commonplace in the days after. Naturally, there were no public enterprises demolishing or rebuilding them. The ruins were abandoned as is, and as long as they weren't in danger of collapse, they still served as homes and storefronts. The climax of the witch hunts were their public executions. Tonight, the hall was set in one such building. In fact, the ruined atmosphere of its exterior helped accentuate the air of immorality. There were three streaks of light heading toward that building. The witches in flight trailed those flashes of light behind them, approaching the human like human-shaped bombers. Wilma was at the center with Carol and Gloria beside her. They're coming out to greet us. Gloria fiercely bared her canines. Responding to the three in flight, several more comets of light soared into the air from different areas of the city. There were three of them, Sandy in the lead, followed by Isabel and Irene. All three were heading towards Wilma and the others. Don't let your guard down, both of you. Wilma brandished her glaive in midair. Three on three. Carol didn't hesitate to sharpen her intent to kill. All six lights passed each other head-on. The sonic boom that exploded in their passing caused a whirl of greater destruction than the surrounding area. After both forces swapped sides and raced several hundred meters apart, they turned around. The tattooed Sandy let out a happy sneer. Hey, it's been a while. I've been waiting for the moment you popped out of your hole. Idiot, idiot, ugly, ugly! That's why I like the Japanese a little better. Isabel taunted them with blatant infantile malice. Blatant infantile malice. Eh, whatever. Beside her, Irene pointed the tip of her katana at Gloria. Gloria, why do you side with them? If you don't have a particular reason, you should come join us. That's my line to you, Irene. You were never the type to resort to treachery. Gloria rejected her offer with a scoff of her nose, and the brown-skinned beauty wavered from the shock, though she quickly rid herself of the mental dilemma. What would you know about me? Huh? I keep thinking Irene's gonna defect. She keeps feeling like she's one of them that, like, is kind of misguided. Like, she's part of the whole Cantal Pandemonium thing. Like, the... But I don't think... I mean, I don't think she's gonna stay. Don't judge or act like you understand me. I only fight to live. The brown-skinned witch let out a war cry and charged straight for Gloria. She wasn't the type to back down from a direct challenge. She stepped forward with a swing of her battle axe. Shut up! You weren't the type to whine and complain either. The two iron-blooded blades clashed, catching each other in search of a target and causing a wild storm of repulsive force. Countless bricks went flying, the shockwave signaling the start of combat for both sides. Irene and Gloria clashed as their rising emotions demanded, cutting into each other. Their opponent was the only thing reflected in each other's eyes. The matchups aside from that one naturally formed on their own. Sandy and Isabel, Wilma and Carol, those four witches were putting on a fluid, fluctuating 2-versus-2 or 1-versus-1 battle. Despite their even numbers, there was actually a different formation behind their pairing. In other words, there was one overwhelmingly strong person and three others. That was how far Sandy's presence stuck out. She was an immovable iron wall that even Carol and Wilma's combined assault couldn't break. No matter what they tried, they couldn't overturn the simple, obvious difference in strength. Every time she smashed into them, they were wounded, blood loss and pain robbing them of both the will and power to fight. To make it worse, Isabel's mean-spirited interference was troublesome. Yeah, she's like a little nagging bitch. She launched effective follow-ups when Sandy kicked them both away, making sure to stack up the damage. Her Morningstar's trajectory was constantly changing, and the timing of her attacks made it difficult to predict the blows. She's like a mosquito. But even as an ally, Isabel was burdened by Sandy's outstanding prowess. As the strongest warrior there, Sandy didn't need to coordinate with anyone else. Her fighting style was monopolistic. Isabel was forced to subconsciously match her movements. Wilma was the one to see through that first. That's where she saw their chance of victory. If they couldn't exceed her, then they'd have to attack their enemy's weakness, their teamwork. Carol, can you stop Sandy for just 1 minute by yourself? I'll try to finish Isabel in that time. Of course, her opponent heard that open challenge. Isabel's face flushed with rage. Underestimating me. Try it, you damn puke bitch. What the fuck does that even mean? She charged towards Wilma with a howling cry, crashing upon her like raging waves with her fierce storm of attacks. At the same time, Carol launched her desperate attack on Sandy. Yeah, risking your life. You're so cute I could cry. She took on Carol's swordplay like someone dealing with a rambunctious child. Sandy laughed as she kicked Carol away. She loomed over her as she tried to rise and slammed her blade down effortlessly like it was nothing. Her cruel saw-edged blade shaved through flesh and bone. It drove a groove into her collarbone. The blade gouged through her lung and continued to rend her heart in two like a melon. Her blood vessels were severed, and her consciousness started to waver. Carol's eyes rolled back as intense spasm assailed her limbs. Blood spewed out around her outstretched tongue. Sandy placed her other blade against Carol's defenseless neck, but she didn't cut into it. She only drew a shallow red line before stopping. Finally, her damaged heart regenerated, and Carol's consciousness recovered. Witches wouldn't die unless their head was severed, and Sandy taunted her, knowing that. Why don't we try seeing how many times you can die tonight in 1 minute? Sound good, my cute sister Carol? She wouldn't deliver the final blow immediately. Part of that came from Sandy's natural sadism, and partly from her arrogance. Even though she knew Wilma intended to eliminate Isabel first, she still played along with it. Even if Isabel was defeated and she had the right to fight them 2-on-1, her confidence wouldn't be shaken. In her mind, she had the leeway to play with a cute, playful kitten before her. Which is why... she felt intense pain in her right tit, followed by a burst of fresh blood from the open wound. For a moment, Sandy froze. Carol launched a powerful blow with a splitting cry, and Sandy spent a moment standing in astonishment at her last-minute failure to parry it. The wound was shallow and far from lethal, but it was still the first time Sandy's skin had shed blood. Could being hit by a counterattack that shouldn't have been a problem prove that she was arrogantly underestimating the cornered Carol? No, that's not it. I know I just... Right before she parried Carol's blade, she stopped an attack. It wasn't from Carol, and it wasn't from one of the witches nearby, either. Which meant it had to be coming from some unseen outsider. Of course, the attack itself didn't deal any damage to Sandy. Most physical weapons were ineffective against him unless it came from another witch with her own repulsion field. Still, even if it wasn't more than a pebble, Sandy still felt the true impact each time that attack bounced off her repulsion field. No, she was forced to feel it. Just now, she mistook her evasion because her attention was distracted by it. While Sandy leapt back, wary of her surroundings, other attacks followed after. They hit Isabel and Irene one after another. They weren't dealing damage, just diverting their attention away from the enemies they were engaged with. However, in a desperate battle of life or death, that meant creating a significant opening. Wilma and Isabel's deadlock was the first to break. Wilma used clever manipulation of her glaive to capture the chain of Isabel's Morningstar. Then when she swung and lost her balance, Wilma delivered a counter slice. You bitch! She was severed from her right collarbone down to the ribs on the opposite side, and the fresh crimson blood sprayed from her like a whale's spout. With her torso nearly severed in half, Isabel was stuck upright with a fatal opening. The blade of the glaive howled as she swung towards her neck, but it was deflected at the last moment by Sandy's sudden intervention. Still, in the moment she turned away, she took Carol's blow to her back. Where's it coming from? Irene was the next to lose focus from the invisible knock. Even if she was aware of it and braced herself, just averting her attention to it increased the burden she was under. While she managed to hold out against Gloria's fierce attack, she was being driven to the point where she could only wait for the final blow. The deep boom of a gun ringing out in the valleys between ruins reached her ears. No, is that man from before? Irene looked out in the distance and saw her conjecture was spot on. Several hundred meters away from the area where the witches were fighting rested Tsunaga Shogo, battered by the night breeze on the roof of a 10-story building. Tsunaga held a large anti-material rifle in his grip, lining up its sights. It was a Dental NTW made in South Africa. The metal structure weighed over 15 kilograms and 20-millimeter autocannon cartridges rested in its bolt-action chamber to fire at supersonic speeds. The huge bullets with the same caliber used in the autocannons installed on the fighter jets, and they boasted an effective firing range and power capable of taking down an armored vehicle at over a kilometer away. Tsunaga was using that to snipe the enemy witches from the back lines. It was one tactic Tsunaga devised to allow a normal human to engage witches in their supernatural powers. He could intervene on the battlefield without exposing his fragile body to danger and lead his allies to victory. The reason he used an anti-material rifle was for the length of its firing range, not its stopping power. Their operation was proceeding as planned, and the battle was growing less one-sided every moment. No matter how much strength Sandy boasted, it wouldn't be easier for her to take on all three at once. All three once Irene and Isabel dropped out. Not to mention Tsunaga's interference was tripping her up. The pieces were putting her in check. It's finished, huh? Tsunaga watched the glowing light trailing into the distance behind Sandy as she retreated. He switched from his firing position and stood up. Now that they had driven off the witches, there effectively weren't any forces left to stop Tsunaga's group from storming the execution hall. Carol and Gloria thoroughly slaughtered all the armed bodyguards and guests before they had a chance to run. By the time Tsunaga arrived from his sniping position, everything was settled. All that remained was the tragic sight of the witch reduced to a dead husk. That, and one human from its management, just as they had prearranged. Wilma was peering into the eyes of her comrade with a bitter look. Katrina! Wilma muttered the name of the witch who could no longer respond to her call. Then, making her decision, she stood up and placed her glaive against the woman's nape. While the severed head rolled past him along with fresh blood, Tsunaga turned to the surviving man. His eyes caught the box of cigarettes poking from the man's pocket. They were the same brand he ghost smoked. Without changing his expression, he picked up the box and put one of the cigarettes mixed with marijuana in his mouth. Oh! What's the objective of these witch hunters? It's not just to put on a tasteless show now, is it? The man gave him an ominous sneer, but remained quiet. Tsunaga blew smoke into his face as he undid the man's belt and removed his pants and underwear. The man resisted, but he couldn't beat Tsunaga's strength. His shriveled penis flopped out. Tsunaga took his lit cigarette and pressed it against the head of his dick. Blisters formed around the burn as the man squirmed. I'll ask you the same question once more, but if you don't answer, I plan to burn your right nut. What the hell? You're fucking crazy! Goosebumps ran up the man's spine as he looked at Tsunaga like he was some incomprehensible foreign entity for carrying out such abnormal violence with disinterest. All these exhibitions are just bonuses! Once he realized he wasn't getting help, he spat that out in frustration. We're just disposing of leftover trash. No matter how much you interfere with us, you're already too late from the start. Nice job you've done. The man's lips drew into a smile, tense with pain and despair. His words didn't unravel the mystery for Tsunaga. They only deepened the enigma. If you want to kill me, hurry up. Still, killing me ain't going to do you any good. Ah, ha, 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 ha. Tsunaga tried asking him several new questions. Who knows? I don't. Ah, ha, ha. Go on. Do it quick if you're going to kill me. However, the man sitting up wouldn't give any proper answer. Tsunaga silently stood up and walked off, abandoning him. The man watched his back trailing away with shock. He thought it was just a bluff, but after savoring his stroke of good fortune, he started to run. You're exactly right. There's no merit for us in killing you, and it won't improve our situation. Wilma had blocked his path. Her perfect doll-like features seemed even colder than usual. But I'll kill you. The sound of the glaive's blade striking the floor was accompanied by the soundless drop of the man's severed penis. Then a scream. The blood-stained man tried to crawl away, but Wilma stomped on his back without emotion. You humans are like that sometimes, aren't you? Occasionally emotion, not logic. Violence, not dialogue. Those are closer to the truth for you all. She rammed the jewel on the haft of her glove, of her glaive, up the man's ass. Ow! With the witch's strength, it pierced right through. The man let out a scream filled with shock and appall at his very organs were skewered. Yeah, I imagine. I wanted you to teach me about that, but it seems impossible now. Finally, the jewel shot out of the man's palate, covered in blood, bringing his life to an end. She turned on her heel to follow after Tsunaga when she heard a high-pitched, peppy voice from the entrance. Wow! There was a witch with a bright smile unsuited to the scene. Allison. You ladies are really strong, aren't you? You took care of all the villains. So cool. She looked around at the hall full of corpses as her young face lit up. She looked at Carol, Gloria, and Wilma with innocent admiration in her eyes. You're Allison, aren't you? I'm Wilma. You don't remember me? Wilma recalled her face from her memory and spoke up. However, after seeing the expression on Tsunaga beside her, she recognized something was abnormal and fell silent. His face was plainly covered in shock. It was rare to see in this man who was hardly fazed by most things. Tsunaga looked at Allison as if he was witnessing the impossible. Hey, Carol, what's wrong? Carol shared the same reaction. Her pomegranate eyes glanced at Gloria after she voiced her confusion. Allison, she died in another witch hunter's hall, just like this one today. I delivered the coup de grace with my own hands. Or my own two hands, rather. The truth carried in her words brought an ominous, undeniable silence. Gloria and Wilma both gasped. The only one left cheerfully smiling among them was Allison. Chapter 4, The Fist of God. This is when shit gets interesting. Oh, here we go. I'm gonna introduce this guy. Yes, he's Catholic, but there's a lot of religious black men, and they don't really have a character in most anime manga productions that show a man, like a black man, using the power of God to do amazing shit. And this guy that they're gonna introduce, like, it's a shame we don't have anything in anime or anything, because like I said, there's a lot of religious black men I know that would really respect this dude, because like, he does some pretty fucking cool shit. And I mean, there's not a lot, I mean, I'm not trying to say all diversity and all that, but there's never really has been a lot of black characters in anime, manga, all that kind of stuff. So, to see this character like that is pretty awesome. And again, it's only in this game, which is weird. But he is a fucking badass. I really do like this character. So we'll introduce you to him and then we'll stop. The Roman Catholic Church, a huge religion boasting over 1.2 billion believers. Its very neat name means universal doctrine, and its size is physical proof that it's not just arrogant pretension. If one included Protestantism, the English Church, and its many other sects, its numbers would grow to over 2 billion. If the number of people devoted to a God's faith determined that God's strength and Jesus Christ they worship might be the world, then the Jesus Christ they worship might be the world's strongest God at present. While Yahweh, originally recorded as YHVH, yes, may exist in Christian doctrine as his father and a superior being, he is not the God directly worshipped by 2 billion people. The God people truly place their faith in is the holy man crucified under the crown of thorns and his teachings. A God's will determines his faith, and the teachings of that faith shape people. The collection of those people create the world, which means that one could also say the laws governing this present world are the spirit of the world's greatest God, Jesus Christ. The peace and chaos in it are all as Jesus and those people influenced by him desired it to be. And the bastion of that Catholic Church is the Vatican. Its name alone bears two meanings. One is the name of the smallest nation, the Vatican City State, which covers about 4,400 square meters within the city of Rome, capital of Italy. The other is the holy seat of authority maintaining the world's largest religion, the headquarters of the Roman Curia, and the will and actions of its inner circle. The meeting currently in session there was taking place in the latter Vatican. There was once an organization within the church, the Universal Inquisition, also known as the Holy Inquisition. The branch was charged with the search and suppression of people and ideas that went against their teachings. It was also known for starting the infamous Age of Witch Hunts during the Middle Ages. In the present, its duty and existence have long faded. However, the role of this clean, cold, dark place was to house that supposedly lost Inquisition. The Inquisition's flames once proclaimed many people witches and burned them away, and they continue to burn even now. A dark relic passed down through the Vatican, unbeknownst even to the Pope, is a necessary evil. It's Valentinos I'm talking about. This is the guy. Valentinos, then the Gospel of Judas is to the east in Japan. It took place in a wooden confessional that could be found in any Catholic church. A narrow space divided the one listening from the one confessing their sins. On the one side, a black man with a huge frame, Inquisitor Valentinos, was speaking solemnly. His voice sounded both like an animal's intimidating growl and a philosopher speaking proverbs. It was a mysterious tone carrying both barbarism and intelligence, and Valentino's stance and appearance also bore that duality. His ferociously muscular body stood over 2 meters tall, covered completely in a chic dark suit. Even the collar was tightened by a tie around his thick, bullish neck, reminiscent of a savage dog's tight collar. Yet this man was no prisoner. With joy and desire, he bound his own body and spirit in the huge chains of faith. That was this man, Valentinos, a wild dog collared by God. It's a holy relic of vital importance which must be hidden from the light for the continued strength of the Vatican and its teachings. Lost in 1870 during the capture of Rome and the end of the Papal States, it has remained hidden for the past 150 years. Do I understand correctly? Precisely, Inquisitor Valentinos. A different voice answered from the other side of the confessional. Valentinos took a deep breath and solemnly waited for more information. There were once the Papal States, boasting 1,000 years of tradition here in the city of Rome. The practice of religious authorities ruling over those worldly territories lasted through the Middle Ages, but it met its end due to the ripples of various wars, beginning with the hero to modern nations, Napoleon. The artifact in question was the one that vanished into darkness during the confusion of that transition. However, the truth was never entered into the Vatican's public records, not even the fact that it existed in Rome at one point.
That was
We must bring it back to the Vatican no matter what. We have to place it under strict security and seal it away from the light of day for all eternity. Then why are we here twiddling our thumbs? Because it's not that easy. The gospel is in a land that's truly a modern den of evil, a Sodom beyond the reach of our Lord's glory. The cardinal in charge of the Vatican's dark side handed Valentino several photos through the small window. Abnormal women were depicted in them. Each one was clothed in striking sensual garb and bore savage weapons such as spears or swords. In that land, these women are called witches. Valentino's brow arched sharply at that word. His bewilderment and irritation showcased the whites of his teeth in a ferocious grin. There are other repulsive monsters wandering about, and they say those women fight against them with inhuman strength. It's also said that witch hunts, the brutal persecution and murder of those women, runs rampant in that land. Are you saying these witches? Are you saying these are witches, the enemy of God? With this base appearance, like something out of a Japanese or American cartoon? All of the women bore appearances meriting that. As Valentino said, they looked like something straight from preposterous fiction. Their appearance was full of sexual charm, and they actively fought monsters with supernatural powers. They were like witches on the silver screen, or even pulp fiction created for entertainment. Even the design of their features was refined and gaudy, brimming with the playful spirit of a modern subculture's design. To a servant of God, it seemed like nothing more than a detailed prank. Plus, those witches were being killed by the self-proclaimed witch hunters. That fact was practically a blasphemous design against the church's history. It was all some offensive anti-Christ caricature. What foolish sacrilege. Let's do this right. What foolish sacrilege. No, I sense even an intentional defiance of God. The moment Valentinos muttered those words, he swallowed his breath in realization. Then you truly mean. The clergyman sitting beside him affirmed his guess. Yes, we're certain the gospel's power is being used. Whoever stole the relic has created a world isolated from Christ's dominion, from the laws of this world, for whatever objective he seeks. And that is the Sodom of the East. And that is the Sodom of the East, then? The Gospel of Judas, an apocrypha to the New Testament. The few truths known through the world regarding it are as follows. Okay. Alright, guys, here we go. In the late 20th century, the papyrus epistles were the papyrus epistles were discovered in Egypt. After they were deciphered, they were revealed to be the Gospel of Judas, the pleas of Judas Iscariot, the betrayer of the 13 apostles. At the beginning of the 21st century, a translation was published and gathered attention around the world. However, its content was deemed academically worthless. What was recorded within it were the claims that Judas was truly the only apostle to understand Jesus's true teachings, and that his betrayal was at the command of Christ himself, like I told you. that this was actually something that they had worked out ahead of time, something like that. However, that recording in Coptic was a copy, not the original. Radiocarbon dating placed it around the 2nd or 3rd century, which meant it was not a record of the word of Judas Iscariot himself. Many believe the intent in writing it during later generations was likely to supplement the logic of their teachings. It would fill in the paradox of why the son of their supposedly all-knowing God couldn't predict his disciples' betrayal, though saying it was all done under Jesus' will was a slightly unreasonable plot. However, The content recorded in Greek within the original from long before that was unmistakably the word of Judas himself, and was completely different from the copy the world learned of. It was capable of overturning the doctrine forming the very foundation of our world. The very existence of that gospel threatens all creation. What Valentino said was no metaphor. I truly possess the power to bend the laws of this world and manifest effects that deviated from them. For example, creating a demonic city overnight dominated by inhuman monsters and invincible witches. However, throughout... However, throughout history, many were unable to destroy it. The existence of our traitor Judas is also one of the founding stones laid by our Lord Christ to form the order of this world, which is all the more reason a petty human must not use it to interfere. Therefore, our duty is to retrieve the gospel and reseal it for eternity. That is all. The black man nodded his sturdy chin in agreement with the cardinal's statements. God's beast was already setting his sights on the future, on his future prey. And the man currently in possession of the gospel? A heretic naming himself after the blasphemous priest Simon Magus. His goals are unknown, but we cannot leave him be. Will you go to Japan for us, Inquisitor Valentinos? I accept. It has always been my duty to strangle as many heretics as possible. Valentino's face twisted with joy. His grin looked more like a lion's than a human's. Please, there are few who can use the mark as you do left in the Vatican now. This will likely be a dangerous mission, even with the power of God's sacrament. The dark-suited figure quietly rose. As he was leaving, he smiled to the cardinal. By the way, I hear that your daughter married an Englishman the other day, despite being a faithful and devout Catholic. The cardinal's pallor changed at those sudden words. Well, historically speaking, there are complex... There are complex sects in England's Protestantism, and many sects share an affinity with Catholicism. Wait, what are you trying to say? This isn't the age of Luther or Calvin anymore. He was confused and lost for words. At this point, they were effectively forced to acknowledge Protestantism and the existence of the English Church, since society would not allow them to denounce those as heretics. Still, Valentino spoke with gravity in his voice. Heretics will be judged. Catholics who fall to heresy will also be judged. There are no exceptions in the duty I inherited from my predecessor. The cardinal issued a scream as he saw an object thrust through the tiny window. Before this man, the laws of humans were nothing but garbage in the face of his religious principles. Only a matching pair of wedding rings, covered in dried blood, remained in the booth. The Inquisitor had already faded into the shadows. He's quite a mountain of a man. Yeah, he's very astute religious, I think. And we'll find out more about him later. Wait till you see the power he has. It's pretty fucking amazing. It's right out of Shonen. You'll be really surprised. I mean, some of these battles have been pretty Shonen, by the way. But, alright guys, that's all I'm gonna do for this one. If you like what you've seen, and sorry I couldn't show you the lolly rape, I mean, that's just not gonna happen. Especially the defiling and putting the guts in her mouth and all that. Yeah, that's probably not gonna go well with especially, I mean, if it's a lolly character, yeah, that's probably not gonna happen. I don't care about adult characters in gore. Gore doesn't really bother me, but loli characters being raped and gore, yeah, that's probably not something that's going to do well on this site, or people aren't going to really care for that much. And, yeah, some of that stuff might be banned in certain countries, so I don't want anybody to get in any issues and all that. It's a lot of fucking red tape. Anyway, guys, this is the Grimlord, and I am out of here. And I'll see you guys later with more maggot baits.